Radio Prague News.
Health Minister David Rath has moved to end forced administration at the largest Czech state-owned health insurance company. The police officer accused of beating up government human rights official Katarina Žák has been suspended pending an investigation, and the Czech Veterinary Office has called off anti-bird flu measures. The Health Minister David Rath has moved to end forced administration at the largest Czech state-owned health insurance company VZP. The decision coincides with the appointment of Pavel Horák to the post of General Director. Minister Rath, who imposed forced administration on VZP last November, said the situation had stabilised and the company's debt had shrunk from 12 billion to 7 billion crowns. The minister's critics counter that it was not forced administration which reduced the debt, but a generous financial injection from the government. The police officer who allegedly beat up a government human rights official on Monday has been suspended pending the outcome of an investigation. Katarina Žák, a senior official from the government's human rights section and Green Party politician, was demonstrating against a neo-Nazi gathering in Prague. She says she was thrown to the ground, kicked and beaten with a truncheon before being handcuffed and taken away for questioning. The Prime Minister has sharply criticised the police action, saying such behaviour was inexcusable and the officer responsible should be sacked. Both the Interior Minister, František Bublan, and the Police President, Vladislav Husák, have said they consider the use of force against Žák inappropriate and have promised a thorough investigation. The Czech Veterinary Office has called off measures aimed at preventing the spread of bird flu in two of the five areas where infected birds were found. They include a ban on outdoor breeding and on the transport of live birds and poultry products. The last infected bird was found on Czech territory 3 weeks ago, and if no further cases appear, the measures will be gradually modified and lifted in all affected areas. Altogether, 12 birds were found to be infected with the lethal H5N1 virus, all of them in southern Bohemia. A Czech government delegation is to leave for Seoul, South Korea, on May 15th to sign a 1 billion euro contract with the South Korean carmaker Hyundai, which is to build a car plant in the Czech Republic. Hyundai Motors officially confirmed earlier this week that the project would go ahead despite the fact that the company's chairman is embroiled in an embezzlement scandal. A ceremony to mark the beginning of construction at the Nošovice plant in the northeast of the Czech Republic has been postponed indefinitely. Customs officials in the Most region of northwest Bohemia have uncovered a stock of illegally produced alcoholic spirits during an inspection of three locations around the area. A production line of around 8,500 litres of barrelled spirit and over 11,500 unmarked bottles of liquor worth around 3 million crowns, that's more than $130,000, were discovered, a customs department spokesman revealed. Two suspects were also detained during the operation, and if convicted, they could face up to 12 years in prison. An investigation is now underway. A public opinion survey just out indicates that more than half of Czechs would like to see Václav Klaus re-elected president in 2008. 57% of respondents said Mr. Klaus represented the country well and should serve a second five-year term in office. The survey also suggested that 73% of people across the political spectrum would like the president to be elected in a direct vote. The retail chain Delvita is preparing to sell more than 90 stores to rival retailers and leave the Czech Republic, the weekly Euro writes in its Tuesday issue, citing several independent sources from the retail sector. Tesco and Rua are among the companies eyeing Delvita's stores, but Euro says it may take months to sell them. The arrival of a new owner can be expected at the end of the year at the earliest, the weekly says. And now for the weather. It should stay partly cloudy with some sunny spells. Daytime temperatures between 18 and 22 degrees Celsius. I'm Chris Jarrett, and that's all for the news.
My name's Zita Asiedu, and up next on Radio Prague, EU labour markets open further, but why are Czechs staying at home? An increasing popularity of Wi-Fi in the Czech Republic, and we hear the tragic story of the disappearing giraffes. We'll also be visiting one of King Wenceslas IV's favourite castles, the Royal Castle of Křivoklát. Four European Union countries announced this week that they were throwing open their labour markets to newcomers from the East. Finland, Greece, Portugal and Spain said they would no longer place restrictions on citizens from new EU members, the Czech Republic included. But there's little evidence Czechs are even interested. Take the example of Germany. The country hasn't lifted its restrictions on foreign workers, but does have a quota for qualified Czech workers. Amazingly, just 18% of that quota has been used. Rob Cameron spoke to labour market expert Daniel Munich.
Well, it's a good message that this is the end of remaining restrictions, but overall it will not have any substantial impact on their labour markets and on our labour markets. Simply, Czechs will not leave the Czech Republic.
Precisely. Why are Czechs so reluctant to leave?
There are several reasons. First, it's a language barrier. Young Czechs, and this is a major group which considers temporary migration, mostly speaks English, and great portion of them not good English. So this is a language barrier which makes the choice of jobs available smaller. Second, the welfare scheme and other forms of insurance which are available here in the country at home are not so easily available abroad. And another reason is that there are other costs related to migration as simply leaving and taking your family with you. You don't have your grandparents who will take care of your kids and so on. So the pool of potential migrants is rather small.
Right. So in other words, you're saying if they haven't gone to Germany, they're probably not going to go to Finland, Greece, Portugal and Spain.
Will not be a great wave. Of course, some people will enjoy working for some period, a couple of months or a year abroad, learning languages, different environment, but there will not be huge outflow of Czechs.
Now, the European Commissioner, Vladimír Špidla, who is, of course, Czech, has said that he wants the restrictions in the rest of the EU, 15, the old EU, to be, he wanted more progress by 2009. These restrictions have to be lifted by 2011 at the latest. Do you think Mr. Špidla has a chance of lifting restrictions in places like Austria and Germany?
Well, it's difficult to predict. In my opinion, he should try some kind of a compromise. I think Germans and Austrians are afraid that primarily their bordering regions, the labor market will be flooded by commuters from the Czech Republic. And if an exception could be that Czechs cannot work in close neighborhood, but could work anywhere else in Germany or Austria, this might be the way to compromise, simply open the market before 2011 or even earlier.
And Rob Cameron was speaking there to labour market expert Daniel Munich. Now Ireland, together with the United Kingdom and Sweden, opened its labour market to citizens from the 10 new EU members in 2004. Since then, according to Ireland's statistics, some 10,000 Czechs have used the opportunity and come to work in Ireland. Drawing from 2 years of experience, the Irish government's Training and Employment Authority has now launched what they term the Know Before You Go campaign in the Czech Republic.
Irsko se svým prosperujícím hospodářstvím a stále více mnohonárodnostní společností se stalo oblíbenou cílovou zemí evropských pracujících.
A DVD in Czech with English subtitles, as well as leaflets, booklets and posters, which will be available through public employment offices, are meant to prepare job seekers for employment in Ireland. They explain various legal things you need to know before you arrive, everything from opening bank accounts to taxes and accommodation. Donald Sands, who is Assistant Director General of the Irish Training and Employment Authority, has come to Prague to launch the campaign. He says it was not motivated by problems with migrant workers, but quite the opposite.
No difficulties. I think the reason we're launching this campaign is that we have a greater appetite for more people who might be interested in working. We are delighted with our fellow workers from other European member states. They have made a huge contribution to Irish life, and they have brought in a whole multi-ethnic culture, which I think we've all benefited from.
The Czech Labour and Social Affairs Ministry is cooperating with the Irish Authority in distributing the materials around the country. Deputy Minister Eva Šmejkalová.
Currently, there are around 10,000 Czechs working in Ireland and some 15,000 Czechs in the United Kingdom. The figures may seem small, but that's only until we get used to traveling in order to find work. Young people find no difficulty in it. They are quite spontaneously joining the labour markets in English-speaking countries. It is more of a problem with older people who are more conservative. Looking for jobs only in the area they live in is an obstacle to their personal growth. I believe it will be our task to change that in the future.
The Deputy Labour and Social Affairs Minister Eva Šmejkalová. The Czech Republic is spending big bucks to keep pace on the information superhighway. The latest example, plans announced by Český Telecom last week to invest $6.5 million to expand its high-speed ADSL internet service to 98% of the country. Here in Prague, technology is in the air, literally. More and more hotels, cafes and restaurants now offer wireless internet connections, and plans for a city-wide network have been discussed. Brian Sabin examines this trend of airborne information and how it's affecting Czechs.
More than half of all Czechs now use the internet at least once a week, and usage has increased significantly in the past 3 years, according to a recent study by the Czech Statistical Office. The same survey says about 20 to 25% of Czechs who do use the internet use it to do work while they're away from the office. A growing number of Wi-Fi or wireless fidelity networks available to Czechs make it easier for them to do their jobs in unconventional places. Max Munson, the owner of Yama, the Hollow, says that his bar and restaurant was the first in Prague to offer free Wi-Fi and that it has since helped change the meaning of the term business lunch.
I can think of over 20 business people right now who have thanked me for having Wi-Fi here. They can come in and a business lunch is no longer a lunch with other people of their company or a business meeting. A business lunch can be a businessman with his laptop where he can sit down, have a nice hot meal, not have to sit at his desk, but still not lose more than a couple minutes of work time.
More computers sold today come equipped with wireless networking capabilities. The marketing director of Czechs Online, Robert Friedrich, says this is driving up interest in Wi-Fi service.
Much parallel to the available hardware that's out there on the market. The more laptops have been sold, let's say, with Wi-Fi possibilities, the more demand that's reflected in the market. So, for example, if you go out to the store right now, it's pretty hard to find a laptop that doesn't have Wi-Fi connection. So, which means that all of a sudden you have this growth in the market of people that would like to use Wi-Fi. It's started to become cheaper and started to become a standard add-on in hardware, in which case the demand has also paralleled that.
According to the online wireless internet directory, JIWire.com, 246 Wi-Fi access points are available throughout the Czech Republic, putting it well ahead of most of Eastern Europe. Poland has about half that number, neighboring Slovakia only 28, and nearby Ukraine has just one hotspot for every day of the week. Many Western European nations, however, have thousands of Wi-Fi access points. Just to the north of Prague, Germany has more than 10,000. Here in the Czech Republic, Max Munson says that the service has caught on after initial skepticism.
At first, a lot of people didn't know what it was. No one on the staff knew what Wi-Fi, as they call it in Czech, knew what Wi-Fi was, so they had to ask. At the beginning, we saw a trickle of laptops come in, maybe one every 2 days, and then it got better.
But Friedrich believes that hotels, cafes, and restaurants, such as Yama, that offer free Wi-Fi, will soon be the majority.
This has grown dramatically over the last few years because of the price of the hardware has gone down, and especially because the price of the access has gone down. What's happened over the last year is that cafes, restaurants, and so on have started providing this as basically a benefit or bonus to their customers. But very, very quickly, what you'll see is that this has become a standard.
While Wi-Fi may or may not be on the menu for all of Prague's eateries, don't expect a citywide network anytime soon. Late last year, City Hall petitioned the Ministry of Information Technology for $4.1 million to set up a wireless service that everyone in Prague could use. The bid caused an uproar among telecommunications providers, who said that such a plan would undermine competition and violate European Union regulations. The ministry agreed, according to spokeswoman Clara Volna.
We didn't give any money to Prague City to support this project because we just couldn't. The goal of our subvention is to support small villages where you just do not have any infrastructure at the moment. In Prague, you have a lot of telecommunication operators.
Information Technology Ministry spokeswoman Klára Volná ending that report by Brian Sabin. Thirty-one years ago last weekend, in the small Czech town of Dvůr Králové, a whole herd of giraffes was shot. Nobody was ever told why. This sounds like the opening of a Kafka novel, but it is a real event, and one that came to fascinate the British journalist J.M. Ledyard so much that he wrote a novel on the subject. David Vaughan reports.
It was at the height of communist rule, and the charismatic director of the zoo in Dvůr Králové, Josef Wagner, travelled to Kenya and came back with an entire herd of giraffes. It is strange to imagine these exotic and elegant creatures sailing up the Elbe River to Chile, Czechoslovakia at the end of their epic journey, and certainly the idea captured the imagination of J.M. Ledyard, then working as a journalist in Prague. He decided to investigate the story, which turned out to be full of Cold War intrigue and symbolism. At first, the giraffes seemed to thrive. They bred and became the largest herd ever to be kept in captivity. But suddenly, in early April 1975, the zoo was sealed off by the police, and by the end of the month, the entire herd had disappeared. On a phone line from Kenya, where he now lives, J.M. Ledyard picks up the story.
The Czechoslovakian state, all the way up to the level of the Politburo, made it a state secret. So these giraffes were literally deemed not to exist anymore. They were all of them shot. 23 of them were pregnant at the time, and they were literally liquidated.
Amid all this secrecy, various conspiracy theories developed about what could have happened. Talking to now long-retired veterinary surgeons and secret police officers, Ledyard found out the version most likely to be true, that the giraffes had picked up some virulent form of foot and mouth.
Obviously, this would have had devastating economic consequences. They were, in true communist fashion, decided to lie and ruin various people's lives to cover up the whole incident. And the interesting thing, maybe today, is that still the Czech state has not come clean on the incident. And my hope is also on the anniversary that the Czech government will finally tell the zoo in Dvůr Králové why the giraffes were killed. Because incredibly, every year since 1975, the zoo director had asked the Czech government, why did you kill the largest herd of giraffes ever assembled anywhere in the world, and has yet to receive a single document in writing.
J.M. Ledyard's book, called simply Giraffe, is not just journalism. He is a self-confessed zoo fetishist with literary ambitions, and the book is a haunting and poetic account, narrated in part from the giraffe's own point of view, of how far human folly and vanity can go, in tandem with a political system that is both closed and inhumane.
And that was David Vaughan. And in case you've just tuned in, you're listening to the International Service of Czech Radio, Radio Prague. And now in Spotlight, we travel with Jan Wellinger, just a few kilometres west of Prague, to one of the country's most popular castles.
With the arrival of spring in the Czech Republic, the tourist season is beginning to slowly reawaken, and with it a favorite Czech pastime, visiting the country's many castles with family and friends. In that spirit today we visit the royal castle of Křivoklát, a most remarkable site with a history that stretches back to the 12th century. Found on a promontory of rolling hills overlooking deep woodlands, Křivoklát was a favorite of King Wenceslas IV. He used it primarily for leisure and sport, preferring it to his father's more famous, Karlstein, located in the same region. Over the centuries, Křivoklát then served as bastion as well as prison. As fans of the esoteric will know, even famous English alchemist Edward Kelly was imprisoned there, breaking his leg in a botched escape. Certainly, Křivoklát never easily released its own. Their histories continue to pervade the site, going back hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
Our tour today, though, begins with a set of jangled keys. Keys belonging to Petr Tsiska, a highly experienced guide who knows this castle inside and out. He's agreed to show me some of Ksivoklad's famous rooms, and to tell me a bit about the castle's historic glory.
Welcome to the Ksivoklad castle. If you would like to get in, we are ready, and the old Gothic castle is ready also too.
Excellent.
Now it's just a few steps to the second castle courtyard, and Petr Tsiska begins telling me about the site. For instance, he explains it was originally not made of stone at all, but wood. Alas, the footprint of the original site lay elsewhere and has never been found.
The origin of this castle is 1,000 years ago, but it was originally a wooden castle, and its position was somewhere in the forest. That's still unknown. That's one of the secrets of this place. The first stone castle was built in the 13th century during the rule of Přemysl Otakar II. Since that time, it had been used as a summer seat of the royalty. Then the Luxembourgs were using this castle, but John the Blind was fighting somewhere in Europe. His son, Charles IV, was here closed in home arrest. His father was afraid of his son to be kidnapped by Czech nobility.
And that is one reason, perhaps, why Charles IV, the greatest of Bohemia's future kings, developed an aversion for Ksivoklad at an early age, an aversion which may have inspired him to found another royal castle that bears his name when he became king, and that was called Karlstein. Still, aversion felt by the father in this case was not shared by the son.
For Ksivoklad castle, the reign of Wenceslaus IV was the golden period, because he was a hunter, and all the leisure time of the king he spent here in this place or in Točník, and he was hunted in the surrounding deep forest, the wild boars, rams, stags, and other animals.
In this area, it's true, there is a very specific geography, very hilly area, very long shadows. You can almost see the stag leaping off the mount.
Yeah. Several kinds of nature. It's a natural reserve of Czech Republic. There was an ask of UNESCO to be one of the parts of natural treasures. This area is so beautiful that everyone would like to spend here. I have been living here for 15 years and I love this country.
Ksivoklad, with its massive ramparts many meters thick and high tower, dominates the local landscape, cut by a curving brook and a quiet little village below. Amazingly, when you take the train through the countryside, it deceptively disappears around the first bend. Lying well off the nearest larger waterway, the Berounka River, meant that Ksivoklad was never attacked, not even during the Hussite Wars when Jan Žižka's army missed it completely on its way to sack Prague. The soldiers were probably better off for their mistake, though. Had they tried to take Ksivoklad by force, they would have faced a formidable defense. But now, Ksivoklad's interior beckons on this sunny day. In a set of two official tours, visitors to the castle can view everything from original dungeons where unlucky prisoners were kept, dungeons now filled with mock-ups of original torture instruments, to tours of the tower, which include exhibits from the hunt, including a collection of poachers' guns designed as walking sticks. The most interesting to my mind, though, were the royal chapel and the great hall, both examples of exquisite Gothic interiors. We look into the chapel, where only royalty or nobility were allowed. There's a 15th century altar of the Virgin Mary. She does not face forward, but to the right, where the Czech kings actually used to sit.
She is not looking to the center, she is looking to the right side, because there was sitting the king and his family. By sides in the chapel, there was sitting nobility. For simple people, was no way in.
But even nobility were deemed sinners when they entered the chapel, as displayed by fascinating carvings of little homunculus beasts, evil bowing down before God. Finally, we leave you with one last impression of Křivoklát Castle this day, just a final touch to whet your appetite, the Great Hall. By far the most exciting chamber in the castle overall, featuring exquisite Gothic ribbing and an atmosphere in which one could practically see kings receive their audiences centuries ago. A throne, restored remnants of frescoes on the wall, a Gothic wooden Madonna, testimony of royal lives gone past, lost in the dust now, but unforgotten in the halls of an exquisite castle, hidden in the forest and hills.
Now we are standing in the center of the castle royal hall, and it's the second largest late Gothic hall in Central Europe. If I was talking about the castle chapel, that's the pearl of the castle. This is the heart. And that's royal hall. There has to be throne, but not original one. They were replaced by this replica in a corner. In a corner was standing the throne only for audiences. It was psychology of the king, nothing new. You know, the managements, the manager is going with the backs to the light. Like the king here, it was not possible for the simple people or for the people coming to the royal court to see the face of the king. He was something more, not God, but he was not a normal man.
And you were listening to Spotlight with Jan Wellinger from the castle of Křivoklát. And that's all from the Radio Prague English Language Service. A quick reminder of our contact information. Send us your comments or questions to the Radio Prague English section at 12099 Prague 2 in the Czech Republic. Or if you prefer to send us an email, send it to english@radio.cz. For those of you with internet access, be sure to visit our website. It's at www.radio.cz/English, where you'll also find out more about our competition. My name's Zita Asiedu. Take care. Thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye.
Posloucháte Rádio Praha, vysílání